iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patti and today we are joined once again by Bhupinder Anand, who's the MD of Anand Financial Architecture, IFAs, based in Uxbridge, alongside Anand Wills and Trust, and he connects law, tax and financial planning to provide a holistic one-stop estate planning service. He's been awarded the Independent Financial Advisor of the Year twice and rated Evening Standard's Best IFA in the Capital, and he was also finance editor of Eastern Eye newspaper and presented his own finance series on ZTV. So he's got a stellar background behind him, and he's also the author of some books as well, which no doubt we'll be hearing about in due course and time as well. Now, today we're discussing a very special subject: is property a good investment? And if you remember from our previous podcast, we were talking about part one of is property a good investment, where why invest in property, what are the risks, and is it a good place for future returns? This week we're going to be talking about taxes and how they play a role in investing in property. How could one invest in property more tax efficiently, and how can one gift property to children as well? Great subjects and very relevant too. Bhupinder Anand, a very warm welcome to you, and thank you for joining us here once again.
Good to see you again, Tony. Always good.
Thank you very much indeed. So now we had the situation that the imminent exit from Brexit caused many to question whether property is still a viable and safe investment model for the future. And we're often asked if we're still confident that property will provide us with continued financial freedom. And without doubt, the answer has always been yes, one would imagine. But leaving political views aside, Bhupinder, and taking into account that with or without the political stances that I speak about, property will unfortunately never be without its problems, and especially when it comes to tax. So I'd like to just look at the capital values, the way they grow, at what rates they grow at, what returns can be supercharged through gearing, property values which can be disproportionately increased by spending on repairs and improvements. And along with that comes the question of what role do taxes play on investment in property. Where do you stand on that?
Good, Tony. I think anybody watching this session today really ought to watch the previous one as well, because this is very much a follow-on to that one, where we explored whether property is a good investment in the first place.
Yes.
And compared and contrasted it with alternatives, because the classic thing is people go into property because they don't know what else they could do. So I'm not going to repeat the stuff we did last time. We went pretty deep into that. But despite that, if somebody still says, no, I believe property is a good thing to be doing and I want to invest in property, remember my philosophy, your home is not an investment. Hmm. It is your home. So we're talking about investing in property other than the home you live in. So something to produce an income and or a capital growth.
Yeah.
As you alluded to, it's not as simple as going down a high street, going into an estate agent's office and putting a bid down. It then comes with a whole raft of issues and costs, and in particular tax. So I, as a financial advisor, just want to mention some of the taxes that will come into play. Excuse me. So the first tax that you've got to realize when you're buying property is stamp duty, often called SDLT, is stamp duty land tax for its complete phrase. It's a tax from the government for the privilege of you going and buying bricks and mortar. Now, there is a certain de minimis, I think it's 150,000, I could be wrong on that, where up to that purchase price you don't pay, and then it's banded upwards. And it can get quite significant, even up to 5%. But here's the thing, we're now talking about property as an investment. So that implies it's an investment over and above the home that you may have bought for yourself. The government has got it in for landlords. And so what they do is they say, well, okay, if you want to buy a second property, by doing so and becoming a landlord, you're preventing somebody else buying and living in it for themselves. So pay an extra 3% stamp duty.
I see.
Ouch.
I see. Yes.
Per 100,000, another £3,000 extra tax. So beware, that's a big add-on. And even if your first property was an investment property, and then you went to buy your own home, you're still going to pay that 3% again because it's on a second or more property. So that's the first tax hurdle you've got to get over, Tony. It's a big one.
Yeah.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. Now, it's clear, Bhupinder, that with the changes that we had back in April 2020, the UK tax authorities were focusing quite heavily on UK property, particularly if you're based or you spend time overseas and rent out a house or apartment, which a lot of our listeners perhaps do from the Indian origin. So in years gone by, renting out a home or property made good financial sense, enabling you to keep a foothold in the UK property ladder if you were overseas for a period of time. Where does the taxation side of things come in on this if you're domiciled externally from this country?
Okay, well, that brings us on to the next element of taxation, which is income tax.
Okay.
So we'll talk both about offshore owning UK, but also UK people. And largely the rules are the same, which is if rent is generated, then you're going to pay tax upon that. That tax is going to be added to the rest of your UK income.
Right.
And take you through the bands. So the first 12,500 roughly of income is tax free. That's all income, whether that's earnings, interest, or rent. So the first 12.5K of all income is tax free. So if you're not a taxpayer and you've got an investment property giving you roughly $1,000 a month, happy days. It's tax free income. The same applies for anybody that's overseas. They also get that allowance, but it doesn't really matter what their overseas income is. It's a UK income. Your next band from 12.5 up to 50,000 is taxed at 20%. And anything above 50,000 up to 150,000, frankly, if you're getting rent of 150K, you're doing very well, is 40%. And above 150K is 45%. So rent sits at the top of your income brackets. Mm. So you look at your earned income, add the rent to it, and it pushes you into whatever bracket you are at that time. Now you get some credits. So the law also changed, Tony. You mentioned a couple of years back. This particular thing is called Section 24.
Yes.
And it's one of the government's stealth taxes, because it doesn't really affect ordinary people who don't own property. Mm. It doesn't affect people just because you own a property and it's rented. It doesn't affect basic rate taxpayers. It's quite specific. It affects people that have got a property that's got a mortgage on it that's rented. And if you're a 40% or more taxpayer. Okay, I'm going to try and keep this bit as simple as possible. The old rules used to say, if I've got rent coming in, and I've got mortgage interest, not the capital repayments, but the mortgage interest, I was running a business. Mm. I got income, I got expenses, I'd end up with net profit, and I'd pay tax on net profit. That's all gone. I've now got rent, and I've got all my normal expenses against that rent, but the rent sits at the top of my income band. And beware now, before it was net profit, that rent could push you into 40% taxes. Mm. In terms of the mortgage interest now, I only get a credit for the interest of 20% of the interest. Meaning, previously, all of the interest was allowed as an expense. Now it's only 20% against my tax. If I'm a 20% taxpayer, it's neutral. It's the same as if the whole amount was allowed. That's fine. Yeah. But if I'm a 40% taxpayer, now I'm only getting 20% of the rent, of the interest, sorry, as a credit against my tax. It's quite complicated, forgive me. But essentially it means property is not as good as it was. Mm-hmm. Indeed, mm-hmm. to the extent that for some people where their borrowings are so high that they could even be making losses, whereas they were making profits before. It's become quite scary.
Yes, very important to know. And thank you for explaining that so clearly to us. We're talking with Bhupinder Anand from Anand Financial Architecture today, and he's the MD of the firm. And we are talking about, is property a good investment? We're talking about taxes and paying taxes and investing in property. So, Bhupinder, how can one invest in property but be more tax efficient, given some of the criteria that you've shared with us already?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to finish off dealing with two more taxes.
Okay.
It never ends. In fact, there's three more taxes to take into account when we're talking about property. And then we'll talk about how to tackle some of these things. So the one that affects all of us, whether it's property or not, is VAT. So, you know, there could be, particularly if you're buying commercial property, VAT could be added. It could be if you're refurbishing a property, if you're doing it up, you're going to pay VAT on expenses, on solicitor's fees. It's a taxation, so we ought to mention it. And then you've got capital gains tax. So capital gains tax, CGT for short, is a tax on uplift in the value of a property. So let's keep it simple. I bought a property for $100,000 and I sell it for $200,000. I made a profit, a gain of $100,000. I need to pay capital gains tax. First of all, I've got an allowance of $12,300. That's nothing to do with the $12,500 income tax allowance I mentioned earlier, which is actually now $12,570. But I got $12,300 of allowance. So that can come off my gain, and then I'm going to pay tax at a rate of either 18% and or 28%. Depends what tax rate I'm in. If I'm a basic rate taxpayer,
yep,
then I'm going to pay 18%. But that gain sits on top of my income for the year I crystallize the gain. And it may push me to be a 40% bracket, in which case I pay 28%. So it's a lot easier to plan for 28% because you're more likely to be in that bracket. So that's a tax on profit, on gain. By the way, there's a lot of talk about capital gains tax being aligned with income tax.
Yeah.
So beware, if you're going into property now, looking to sell at some point in the future, don't rely on the capital gain tax being only 28%. It could go up to 45%. It's an unknown future tax, as most taxes are.
Yeah.
So capital gains tax is a big one to beware of. One of the issues around CGT, people, and I see this frequently, Tony, every week I must meet one or two people who have fallen into this trap. Now, we've mentioned this on previous podcasts, but capital gains tax is not a tax for selling a property. It's for disposing of a property, which could be by way of sale, but of course it could be by way of gift. If I've gifted my property to my child, even though no money changed hands, I've crystallized, triggered the capital gain. I have to pay capital gains tax, even though I got no money. By the way, the new rules, that CGT must be paid within 30 days of the completion of the transaction. So it's not like I can put it in my tax return and claim it, you know, maybe a year or so down the road.
So how can we go about making this all more efficient, getting back to the focus of our discussion?
Right. So one more tax and then we'll do that, which is inheritance tax, of course. Again, we've done sessions on this, that property is part of your wealth. You're going to lose 40% of it on death. So a whole bunch of taxes that are there to attack you either directly or indirectly. What can we do that might avoid some of these taxes or at least mitigate some of these taxes? So in no particular order, just exploring some ideas. Maybe if you are looking to go and buy an investment property, set up a limited company to buy the property. Often, if you're only going to buy one property, that may not be worth the hassle and the extra accountancy fees and filing fees that you may have to deal with. Nevertheless, the benefit is the income belongs to the company, not you. That means it pays corporation tax, which is at 19% currently, on the first £50,000 of profit. That's going up to 25% on profits above that, or that is banded. So there's company corporation tax to pay. One of the benefits of doing that is that your interest is now a fully relievable expense again, unlike the Section 24 rule that said personally, you only get 20%.
Interesting. Okay.
You're back into traditional old days.
Right.
Can I give you an opinion, Tony, rather than just pure facts? My opinion is that that's likely to change in the future because so many people are now doing it this way.
Yeah.
That the government's expectation of tax through the Section 24 rules is not going to materialize. And government at a whim could just say limited companies apply the same rules. Let's see. We can only talk about today's rules. That was an opinion. Well, a further part of that is that, remember, that net profit, the company paid its tax, is in the company account. So if you want it back for yourself, how are you going to take it out of the company? Because it's going to be taxable upon you. That could be that you lent money to the company, often called a director's loan. So you could take some of that net profit back to repay your loan. There's no tax on that. But if you're taking the profit from a company to yourself, you're either going to pay income tax because you took it as a salary or a bonus or a consultancy fee.
Yep.
Or you took it as a dividend because you're a shareholder. Dividends are a very interesting story as well, Tony. The first £2,000 of a dividend is tax-free, so that's handy. So I could and should take at least £2,000 a year out of that profit. Maybe I set it up with my spouse or partner, and we both own shares. We could get £4,000 out of the company tax-free. Thereafter, there are different rates that apply to dividends compared to income tax, but up to £50,000, it's 7.5%, which is not bad. Mm. Obviously, it's 7.5% after the company's already paid 19%. So that's why it's lower. So companies are one way of avoiding taxes or mitigating taxes on rental property. It doesn't get rid of capital gains tax. Instead, any future sale is taxed in the company as profit in that year to company. Companies don't have capital gains tax nor CGT allowances. It's just treated as income if you sell it. And of course, if you want to get it out, you're going to pay your dividend tax to take it back out again. A company doesn't really help you for inheritance tax because although you may, I come across this frequently where people just have not really thought it through. They think, I don't own the property, a company does, therefore it's not in my estate for inheritance tax. But you own the shares of a company and the shares are in your estate for inheritance tax and the shares value is represented by whatever the company's got. So there are, a company could be an initial thought. There are a few others we'll explore, Tony.
Log on to iglobalnews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iglobalnews.com. We are talking with Bhupinder Anand from Anand Financial Architecture, and we're talking about the pros and cons of actually property and is it a good investment and the way taxation works around that. Bhupinder, gifting a property to children, inheriting a property from an older party, parent, grandparent, whoever it may be, where do we stand with that where property investment is concerned and what are the taxation clauses and legalities behind that?
This is really fascinating, Tony. It's something that we explored in, I think, episode one or two of our estate planning discussions was how to transfer wealth down the generations. So it is a good one to bring up here because I see this again on an almost weekly basis where somebody wants to gift a property to a child. They think, first of all, quite rightly, that if I gift a property, I reduce my own estate and therefore I avoid inheritance tax as long as I survive 7 years. The famous seven-year rule, otherwise we'd all do it on deathbed. So the government says, if you want to give something away, do it, no problem, but you've got to survive 7 years. On its own, that itself is not a problem, except people do it without taking advice. And I've seen virtually every variation of what can go wrong if you don't do this bit properly. So yes, the 7 year clock will start as long as you, as the donor, the giftor, don't keep the rent. Again, okay. I've seen it, Tony, where parents are giving a property to their child, and in doing so, sorry, my lights go off on automatic here in my office, so we need a bit of movement to get them going again. And so a parent gives a property to a child,
yes,
starts a seven-year clock, but then says, I want to keep the rent on it. They even declare the rent themselves. That gift never happened. It's called a gift with reservation. You gave something away, but you reserve the right to keep to enjoy it. Or they give something away and they say, no money changed hands. We mentioned this already, that there's no capital gains tax to pay. Yes, there is. Your giving of an asset away is a crystallization of a capital gain. So you may end up having to pay capital gains, even though you got no money for this property. So giving to children is only good from an inheritance tax perspective. How could we avoid those taxes? Give it to a trust. I'm not going to go into detail on trust. We've got previous sessions that have done that. But essentially, a property going to a child is giving a problem to the child that if the child gets divorced, half that property could disappear. But what if they go bankrupt or creditor issues? Your gift could disappear. And of course, you're making your child wealthy, that eventually they've got an inheritance tax problem. If, however, you gift to a trust, all of those problems go out the window because a child doesn't own the property, a trust does. That also allows you to decide who to give the income to, and you could give your income to a grandchild. Grandchildren, from the second they're born, can earn £12,500 of income tax-free. Most people don't know that. They think it's only they only have the allowance when they're 16 or 18. No, it's from the day they are born.
Excellent.
But that income has to come from a non-parent. So it could be a grandparent who gifts to a trust and then gives the income to a child. The trust pays no tax. The child does, up to $12,500 tax-free. By the way, just on a nuance of that, it doesn't have to be grandparent, grandchild. It could be uncle, niece or nephew.
As long as they're related. So that's the thing behind it.
No, it doesn't even have to be related.
Okay, interesting.
Just not parent-child, any other relationship. So I've done this where two brothers gift a property for each other's nieces or nephews. They can then have that income.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
So just like, I suppose, if you want to look at it like a safety deposit box, and we use that as a metaphor, assets can be added and removed from the trust during your lifetime. Is that possible, and is that a legal thing that we can do? For example, you may have large expenses that can't be met out of normal income, like a new car, holiday, or house repairs. So the appropriate sum, is it possible to get that transferred to one's bank account from the actual trust that you talk about?
The settlor, that's the person who makes the gift to the trust, cannot have that asset or anything for it back again. It's a one-way street. It's irrevocable is the word that we use.
Yeah.
It's there for a beneficiary. Now, if the beneficiary wants to take an asset out of the trust, they can. It could be the parent who settled the property into trust is a trustee, so they're actually still in control. So they could choose with discussion with the beneficiary that they want to take some money out. Obviously, if it's a property, that's not so easy because it's bricks and mortar. But they could raise a mortgage on that property in the trust. By the way, it needs to be mortgage-free to get into the trust. There are variations on that, but just let's just keep it simple. But once it's in a trust, the trust could raise a mortgage. So it's now got cash. And it can lend money to a beneficiary tax-free and interest-free. Again, very detailed. The trust session explains that a lot more. In terms of moving that property in, earlier on I talked about a disposal of an asset like property would crystallize a capital gain. We can use a trust to hold over the gain. That means I bought it for 100, it's worth 250. That 150 of gain, I'm passing it to the trust and saying that's now your problem for when you sell it. So I don't have to pay the 28% capital gains tax. That's a really neat trick for being able to do
that. That's a very good idea indeed. And thank you for explaining that to us.
One last thing which we didn't talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not going to go into any detail, except a pension, your pension fund, could be used to buy commercial property, not buy-to-lets, not residential, but commercial property. And that can make a lot of these taxes just disappear. So, separate subject.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
Bhupinder Anand, MD of Anand Financial Architecture. As we talk about buying and selling property and look at the tax implications of doing as such, is buying property such a good idea after all? If people want to get in touch with you and get more advice on the subject we've spoken about today, and others for that matter, how can they go about getting in touch with you?
If you'd like to contact me, if you'd like a personal conversation, confidential conversation about your own planning, you can contact me either at my email, which is my first name, Bhupinder, Bhupinder, at Anand Associates, A-N-A-N-D Associates, plural, .com. Bhupinder at AnandAssociates.com. Or give me a call. I'm on 01895-457-440. That's 01895-457-440. And as we come up to the end of 2021, when we're recording this, Tony, I just wanted to wish everybody a very safe and happy and much more prosperous 2022. And I look forward to talking with you next year and the year beyond. Let's enjoy making our money sweat for us.
Please note, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. All investments can fall as well as rise in value, and you can lose some or all of your money. Additionally, this podcast does not constitute an investment recommendation.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.